Good morning. Today I'll be reading from Esther chapter 7, verses 1 through 8. So the king and Haman went to Queen Esther's banquet, and as they were drinking wine on the second day, the king again asked, "Queen Esther, what is your petition? It will be given you. What is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it will be granted." Then Queen Esther answered, "If I have found favor with you, your majesty, and if it pleases you, grant me my life. This is my petition, and spare my people. This is my request. For I and my people have been sold to be destroyed, killed, and annihilated. If we had merely been sold as male and female slaves, I would have kept quiet, because no such distress would justify disturbing the king." King Xerxes asked Queen Esther, "Who is he? Where is he, the man who has dared to do such a thing?" Esther said, "An adversary, an enemy, this vile Haman." Then Haman was terrified before the king and queen. The king got up in a rage, left his wine, and went out into the palace garden. But Haman, realizing that the king had already decided his fate, stayed behind to beg Queen Esther for his life. Just as the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet hall, Haman was falling on the couch where Esther was reclining. The king exclaimed, "Will he even molest the queen while she is with me in this house?" As soon as the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
I'd like to say, don't try that at home. All right? Like, none of that. Don't try that at home. But isn't it interesting the risks that people will take? Like, people do that stuff. They jump off the side of buildings, and they jump off out of planes, and they do all sorts of things. I would like to go on the record as saying, probably none of that will I ever do. Like, no, that's not going to happen. You might be able to get me to do a tandem skydive jump out of a plane, but boy, would that take a lot of coercing. You know, that's just, but people take risks, right? We take risks every day. We take risks. The trick is to figure out what risks are worth taking and what risks are just foolish. Another way to ask the question is, what risks are meaningful and what risks are meaningless? And that's what we're going to talk about today. Would you bow your heads and pray with me and for me? Holy God, we give you thanks for today, for this opportunity to be together and to talk about one of these great books of the Bible. And I pray your blessing upon us all. Bless the words that I speak, that they might be yours and not mine. For with you, we can have so much. And we pray this in the name of Christ. Amen. So risk-taking is an important thing to figure out and to think about. Some risks, as I said, are meaningful and some are meaningless. There is a place in Las Vegas, Nevada called the Heart Attack Grill. And as you can imagine, the food there is not particularly healthy. They have fries fried in pure lard. They have non-filtered cigarettes. They have butterfat milkshakes and this burger that they call the Heart Attack Burger. Let me get this for you. The Heart Attack Burger, yes. And recently, while someone was eating in the restaurant, they had to be taken to the hospital. Like, no big surprise, right? The owner said that he wishes the customer a swift and full recovery, but, he added, the customer got exactly what she asked for, a brush with death. We attract thrill seekers and risk takers, adding that his restaurant is bad for you, but fun. Yeah, meaningful or meaningless? Yeah, I'm not even going to ask you to answer that. There's no celebration to be had over that. That was just a bad decision. I mean, there's nothing to be gained from that. But there are other risks that feel risky, and you have to kind of figure out meaningful or meaningless. So some time ago, a young woman I know came to me. She was very excited. She had this big grin on her face, and she had a DVD in her hand. And she said, "You have to watch this." I said, "Okay." So we found a player, we put the DVD in, and she was so excited she could hardly contain herself. We were watching her tandem skydive jump. And she said, "That's me. I did that." She was beside herself. And I looked at that and I thought, "Oh my goodness." And I have to tell you, I was happy for her. Like, I think for her, that was a good risk. Now, don't get me wrong. I am not encouraging all of us to go jump out of a plane. I'm encouraging you to think about it before you do it, all right? But for her, this is somebody I've known since she was in high school, and she was always someone who liked to think she was in control of the next step in her life. Like, she thought she could control it all, and I was a little concerned about her. But if she could go and research, find the safe place to do this, and actually step out of a plane, like, I didn't worry about her. I knew that she would take whatever life sent her way, whatever risk came her way, whether it was taking a new job, moving to a new city, getting married. We face risks all the time in our life. Some are big and some are small. But the question that we're going to ask ourselves, meaningful or meaningless? Today we're going to talk about one of my favorite books of the Bible, one of my favorite people in the Bible. And the book is, this is one of the questions that you can ask as a result of reading this book. We are talking about who I think is perhaps the strongest woman in the Bible. She is somebody that I greatly admire. If you don't know her, you need to get to know her. Her name is Esther. And Esther is someone who had to make this decision. She was asked to take a risk, meaningful or meaningless. But in order to study this book, in order to get the full benefit of this book of Esther, we have to kind of get to know it. And so if you have never read the book of Esther, I'm going to give you an overview, but I'm sorry, you're not going to get the whole thing. But we're going to walk through this. We're going to have to move quickly because there's a lot to cover. I need to make a little statement before we start. The artwork that you see was something I spent hours on this week working on it. And if you would like copies of it after the service, I still have the original drawings that we can use. But it is, in fact, my artwork. You can't blame anyone else for this. So this is the story. The book of Esther opens with a party. It's a huge party. It's a 180-day party that King Xerxes is throwing. This is King Xerxes. You see why you might want some copies of it. This is King Xerxes. King Xerxes was the king of Persia. He was a king of a very vast empire, and he was throwing this party basically to show off. This is a man who had a lot of wealth. He was looking at conquering another country, and he wanted everybody to know what a great guy he was and how powerful and rich that he was. And so he threw this party. During the last 7 days of the party, he wants to have the ultimate thing happen. And so he decides to send for Queen Vashti. Queen Vashti is a beautiful woman, and she was the queen of Persia at that time. Now, you have to understand that being the queen of Persia does not mean that you are an equal to the king. This is not like you know, when you read Cinderella and Sleeping Beauty, the king and queen always kind of sit together in the throne room and they maybe make decisions together. This is not what was happening in Persia. So the king sends for Queen Vashti. He says, come appear before everybody and let me show off my beautiful wife. Well, Queen Vashti says, no, thank you. I don't want to do that. And she refuses to come. This is a very big deal. She refuses to come. The king gets really angry. His ministers say, oh, you can't have your wife doing that. You need to get rid of her. And so Queen Vashti is gone. All right? We don't really know what happened to Queen Vashti, but she is out of the story. And so time passes a little while, the party finishes, but then all of a sudden, King Xerxes says, I want a queen. I don't have a queen. And so these same ministers said, all right, I have this brilliant idea. Let's have a beauty contest for all of the young maidens in our kingdom, right? And so they gather together, all the beautiful young women in the kingdom, and they have this beauty contest. I know, they're lovely, aren't they? And so they have this beauty contest, and they're from all over Persia. Now Esther, we're coming to Esther now, because in the capital city of Persia, in Susa, lives this beautiful girl, and her name is Esther. She is Jewish, and she is an orphan. And she is just a delightful young woman, all right? Now Esther has an uncle named Mordecai. Mordecai has raised Esther since she was young. We don't know what happened, but they are very close, and he's been like a father to her, and he's just a wonderful influence in this thing. Now, Mordecai, what you need to know about Mordecai, are you still with me? Yes. Okay, good. Mordecai was a leader in the exile. He was a Jewish leader in the exile. He was also a minor official in King Xerxes' court. Jewish leader, official in King Xerxes' court, uncle to Esther. All right, now here's what you need to know about the history of this time period. Persia ruled a very large part of the land. You can see the map. Go ahead and show that map. All that orange is Persia. That is a large kingdom. And King Xerxes is in control of all of this. The reason the Jews are where they are is if you go back to 587 BCE, when the Jews were living in Jerusalem, you remember the northern kingdom fell. The Babylonians came in and conquered Jerusalem, the southern kingdom. They took all the Jews that were living there and exiled them all the way around to Babylon. So all the Jews have been living in Babylon for some years now. And that's why the Jews were there. Then in 539, King Cyrus of Persia comes in and conquers Babylon. There was a lot of conquering that happened then, all right? So now King Cyrus of Persia conquers Babylon. He says to the Jews in exile, if you want, you can go back to Jerusalem for reasons that you will have to read later, all right? So some of the Jews go back, but some of them stay because they've been living here for years now and they have relationships and they have families and they have jobs. Mordecai is an official in the court, for heaven's sake. They have lives here. So that's what's happening in the world at this time. So back to the story. King Xerxes is having this beauty contest. And so all the young girls are gathered together. Esther is one of the most beautiful. And they are sent to the capital, to the palace. Before they go, Mordecai says to Esther, he says, very wisely, do not tell anyone that you're a Jew. Because the Jews just lived amongst the people at that time. They didn't have the temple. It was more, they were living all together. So don't tell anybody that you're a Jew, and don't tell anybody that I'm your uncle. Very important to the story. Don't tell anyone you're a Jew. Don't tell anyone that I'm your uncle. She says, okay, and off she goes to the palace where they have the beauty contest, and Esther wins because she is, in fact, the fairest of them all. Right? And this is why we know that. Here's the verse from it. Now the king, King Xerxes, was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval more than any of the other virgins. And so he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of the banished Vashti. Sounds like a fairy tale, right? Not so much. So you remember that I said in that time period, the king ruled this whole land, and Queen Vashti was summoned to appear before Xerxes, right? Esther is not an equal to the king at all. Esther will be kept in her own room probably, but in a harem with a bunch of other women, and from time to time, King Xerxes will call for her, and she will go and see him. He might call for her at 3 a.m. He might call for her at 3 p.m. It doesn't matter. When the king wants to see the queen will go before him. This is not the life that Esther had in mind. This is not the life that any of us would want to have, but this was the reality of the kingdom at that time. And so that's where we find the story. She lives separated from him. Now, here's what's important. This is what I meant to tell you. If she goes in front of him, if she says, I want to go see the king today, and she's not summoned, he could have her killed. This may sound unbelievable to you, but it's true. It happened. There are recorded incidences of history. If you go before the king and he has not called for you, he may have you killed. He may have you banished, or he may have you killed. It is not something that you want to do. That is also important to the story. The only other character in the story that you need to know about is Haman. We call him the evil Haman. All right? So when I say Haman, you go, boo, Haman. Right, Haman is a bad man. He's just bad. You're going to have to read about him and Esther. He does all sorts of terrible things. But what he does that is pertinent to our story today, he doesn't like Mordecai. For whatever reason, he does not like Mordecai. He knows Mordecai is Jewish. And he goes to King Xerxes and he says, are you all still with me? Good. He said, are you really still with me? Because that was, okay, great. He goes to the king and he says, Xerxes, there is this terrible people in the land. and they don't worship you like they should, and so I think you should have them all killed. And Xerxes signs an edict calling for the death of all of the Jews in his kingdom of Persia. This does not say much for Xerxes. It says even less for Haman. He wants everybody killed. Haman does this because he wants Mordecai out of there. Remember, nobody knows Esther is also a Jew. I want to make sure I'm giving you everything. Yes. So Mordecai hears of this. Mordecai hears of this, tells Esther that she must go before the king and plead for her people. Do you remember what happens if you approach the king and he doesn't tell you? Yeah, it's bad. You may die. But Mordecai asks Esther to do this. Esther is frightened. She doesn't want to do it. She relays this to her uncle. They're no longer together. This is all done by messengers at this point. The messenger comes and says, Esther, Uncle Mordecai wants you to go in front of the king and beg for the people. And she says, go tell my uncle I'm terrified and I don't want to do that. I don't blame her. Here's what I think happened. I think she told the messenger that. The messenger goes, tells Mordecai. She's expecting Mordecai to say, oh, sweetie, that's okay. That is awfully hard. You don't have to do that. I'll figure something else out. I mean, this is a young girl who didn't ask for any of this. I think she expects that to happen. But that's not what happens. That is not what happens. Instead, Mordecai relays back to her, and if he could, he would take her by the shoulders and he would say, Esther, you can do this. Go and plead with the king. I love Mordecai. Mordecai is this wonderful example of a man who sees in Esther, in this young woman, more than she knows she has. He sees in her courage and bravery and intelligence. And so instead of saying, it's all right, I'll take care of it, he says, no, Esther, stand in the doorway and step out. He's asking her to do a very bold and brave thing. He says this to her, for if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And then comes the most famous line in the book of Esther. Would you read it with me? Are you ready? And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this? Who knows? Mordecai doesn't pat her on the head and let her hide. Mordecai says, take a risk. Be brave. Step forward. Esther didn't want any of this to happen. She didn't cause it to happen. But here she is, this young woman, standing in an open doorway. She knows if she steps forward, she will be in a free fall of the king's whim. She doesn't know if the king will say, all right, Esther, speak, or all right, Esther, you're out. She's falling into something she doesn't know what will happen. This is what we call a risk. And she doesn't know what to do. How does she decide? How do any of us decide when you're faced with that kind of a decision? How do we know which risk to take and which risks are just foolish? Perhaps for you, it is not quite so dire as for Esther. But I'll bet you have things in your life that you're trying to figure out. Risk that you might be thinking about taking. How do you decide when to jump and when to stay put? Perhaps it is a career change. Perhaps you've been offered a job somewhere else and you're thinking, I don't know if I want to move the whole family. That's a big risk. Too risky? Perhaps you want to go back to school and finish that degree that you started, but in order to do that, you need to think about the care of your children. Is this the right time? Is it too risky? Maybe it's smaller than that. Maybe you've heard somebody from the pulpit say, hey, we need people for a mission trip. and you'd kind of sort of maybe like to go on a mission trip, but you're not really keen about spending a week with teenagers or even adults. You don't know what to do. That feels risky to you. Or maybe you're like the young man I've been talking to. He's been asking about faith. He's been learning who Jesus is, and he thinks he's ready to be baptized. He thinks he's ready, but he's not sure because to him, it feels like a big risk. What if it's not real? What if I come up here and kneel and I get baptized and it's not real? But what if it is? What if it is real? What am I asking for? What might Jesus do in my life because I say yes to him? Risks are inherently confusing. You can almost always argue both sides. And so that's what we're trying to figure out, meaningful or meaningless. Listen, I think Esther had a great argument for not appearing in front of the king. She could make a very good argument not to do that, and yet she decided to take the risk, which is why I think she's such an amazing role model in the Bible. So how did she do that? I think she did a couple of things that will help us figure out which risk to take and which risk to avoid. So the first thing that Esther looked at was to look at the hazards. Look at the hazards. If you're about to take a risk, look at the hazards. Esther knew what they were. Undoubtedly, she had seen people go before the king and it not go well for them. Xerxes was a man who controlled this vast empire through fear and intimidation. This is the same man who had all the virgins in the kingdom rounded up for his express pleasure. She was understandably fearful, and fear is a worthy consideration. Yet do we allow fear to stop us from taking that step? History is filled with men and women who said no to fear and changed the world. Imagine if they had allowed fear to dissuade them from acting. Imagine Paul choosing to stay home rather than embarking on those missionary journeys that caused us to be here today. Imagine Dr. King, instead of being forceful, using gentle words to try to do away with segregation because he was afraid of people. Imagine Florence United Methodist Church almost 15 years ago saying, no, we don't want to help those children in Sierra Leone. It's hard. It's scary. It's a country that had civil war. Imagine saying no to that. Imagine saying no to the people of Cabeza, Cuba, who wanted help building a church. Imagine saying no to opening our church up so homeless people could spend the coldest nights of the year here. Imagine saying no to the children down at Hutchinson Elementary School because we can't be in a school. There's a separation of church and state. We can't do that. That is too risky. Imagine saying no. There are others who are better equipped. It's not our problem. This is not who we were called to be. But I think it is who we are called to be. We are called to be Paul and Dr. King and Rosa Parks and to build hospitals and to start schools and to be in our public schools and to mentor students and to teach Sunday school. That's what we're called to do, and often it feels incredibly risky. It's important to look at the hazards. It's important to figure out why you might not want to do it. But it is equally important not to allow fear to overrule a call from God. Next, enlist the help of others. Here's what I love about Esther. Esther realizes her uncle is serious, and I think she hears him and says, maybe I can do this. But the first thing that she does, look at this Bible verse. Here's the first thing that she does. She says to Haman through this messenger, go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. Go fast for me. That means pray for me. Pray for the situation. She enlists the help of others right away. She knows she can't do this on her own. She knows that taking this kind of a risk is something that you need the help of others to do. Esther asked all the Jews to fast and pray for her. Who will pray for you and be a truth teller to encourage you to look honestly at the situation? Who will do that for you? Last week, Tom preached a sermon on telling the truth in love. You need those people. When you're about to take a risk, you need someone who loves you to say, here's what I think. Find them. If you don't have them, you need to find them. Join a small group. Volunteer for a ministry. Ask an acquaintance out for coffee. Build relationships that will help you, people that will want to help you do the things that God is calling you to do. The first stop is pray for yourself. The second stop is get others to pray for you and with you. Finally, separate ego from need. Sometimes we take risks because it's cool. Sometimes we take risks because we're going to look really good and we're going to have bragging rights for it. Eating a 4,000-calorie burger, the only thing I can think is that's about bragging, right? It's not doing anything else for you. Jumping out of a plane? Bragging? Or is it encouraging you to be brave? You have to figure it out. You have to take time to weigh and make those decisions. You have to decide if you're doing it because you want to show off or if you're doing it because it is going to be meaningful. Sometimes it's okay to go faster, higher, and harder just because. Life is full of risks, some of them big and some of them small, but every now and then we will come across a risk that is life-changing. Esther's risk was not about herself. Esther's risk was about helping others. It wasn't about getting more, it was offering more for her people. How will you know what to decide? So we're back to the story. Esther knows what's at stake. She's enlisted the help of others. She's put aside her ego to embrace a greater calling. And here's what she tells Mordecai. I will go before the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish. This is a young woman who figured it out. This is one of the reasons I love Esther. She had the ability to figure out that sometimes God calls us to do things that are hard, that are risky, but he calls us to do them because they will make a difference in the world. I don't have time to tell you all the rest of the story. I encourage you to read the whole book. Here is a brief synopsis of it. Esther does, in fact, go in front of the king. She walks into the room, and I can only imagine her heart is beating so quickly. She goes in front of the king, and the king recognizes her. So she's safe. He recognizes her. She says she has something for her. She holds a banquet, which is where we pick up where Jamie read it. It's Queen Esther, King Xerxes, Haman, and probably some other officials are in this banquet room. And the king says, Esther, what can I do for you? Remember, he doesn't know Esther's a Jew. And she says, you can save my life and the life of my people because you have signed an edict to kill all of the Jews, and I am one of them. And he is like, oh my goodness, I don't want to kill you. You're still beautiful. I don't want to kill you. I don't know if that's why I did it, but like, this is a bad guy, right? So anyway, he doesn't want to kill her. And he says, who did this? And this is great TV drama. She stands up and she points to Haman and she says, this vile Haman. Spoo, hiss. Yeah, vile Haman. And the king gets furious and he leaves the room and Haman tries to talk Esther into helping him and she's having none of it. The story does not end well for Haman. But it does end well for Esther and Mordecai and all of the Jews. Because of her willingness to take a risk, she saves the Jews. She saves an entire people because she was willing to step in an open doorway and look out and say, this is not for me. This is bigger than I am. And God is with me. And she takes that step and begins that free fall, and she trusts that God will catch her. Is there a risk in your life that God is calling you to take? Is there something that's been pulling at you in the back of your mind, and you think this might be what God is calling you to do, but you're not sure because it feels too risky? If there is, I want you to go home. I want you to read the book of Esther, all four chapters. It's only four. It's not that big of a book, and it's a great read. And then ask yourself the question, what is God calling me to do? Imagine if we were a whole church of risk takers for God. Imagine if we were all willing to go into that free fall, knowing that God was going to catch us, and it didn't matter how scared we were. It didn't matter what other people said. It only mattered that we trusted God and we were in God's arms. That's my prayer for us as a church, that we be those people. So go home and read the story. Read it to your young children. Read it to your girls especially. This is a story of power and strength and courage and bravery and intelligence. And it's important for us to know that. Would you back?